definite conflicts between the labor and Rick Urien, who's representing Wing Airlines employees.
Rick favored it, I assume. Employees.
No, there's some definite things that he objected to in
Rick
the bill.
Did.
And I felt that we all needed to study a little bit more and reconsider it, so I held it over.
Thank you.
Okay.
And you say we're taking up
63. That's police standards. Yeah. House State Affairs Committee will come to order, and we have a quorum. The first bill that we're going to take up is House Bill 63 and the police standards. This has some specific statutes under which the council operates. It'll be addressing an annual report, which will come under the Department of Public Safety from now on. And also it clarifies the jurisdiction of the council. And we have Jim Mayer as the first person to testify. Mr. Mayer, welcome.
My name is Jim Mayer. I'm the administrator for the Alaska Police Standards Council. I'm mainly here to answer any questions or concerns you may have regarding this bill, but if you like, I will basically give you what we have in it. It's more of a housekeeping type of bill. The original act was passed in 1972, and since that time we found that some of the language was ambiguous and so forth, and we're trying to clean that up so that it's more understandable and clearer. I do want to call your attention to one item, which is a substantial change from the original statute. Comes in 1865 280 under exemptions on page 4. The original bill, and as it stands now, exempts the commissioner and deputy commissioner of public safety and all chief administrative officers from compliance with this statute. Over the years, we found that of the approximate 140 police departments that we have within the state, over 100 of them have chiefs that actually are operating police officers and pull a shift the same as any other officer, rather than being an administrator there and have a dual capacity. The council feels that if a chief of police is going to act as a police officer, then he should have the training of a police officer. So the way we have it written now still permits the municipality to hire whoever they want as a chief of police, but would require that that chief be trained as all other police officers would. It defines police officer in a little more clear than the original statute. There was some ambiguity there. We did request a repeal of the annual reporting requirement, as mentioned. We do, under the proposed bill, authorize the council to employ an administrator and other persons necessary to carry out its duties. In the past, and since 1974, I believe they've been doing that through the budget process rather than having statutory authority to do that. This would merely bring that up to date. We've removed several words throughout the statutes. We've removed the word temporary as it applies to police officer and substitute or probationary, and preparatory. We've substituted the word basic. We have no temporary police officers in Alaska. Most of these statutes came in the past from Oregon and other states, as have many of our statutes, where they hire a temporary police officer to act at some sporting or athletic event. We just don't have those up here. Are there any questions that I might be able to answer for you?
Yes, sir.
Yeah.
Going back to annual report, which will now come under, will be turned in by the Department of Public Safety.
Yes, sir.
In essence, was that really a duplication, or it was never required for the Department of Public Safety to do the report before?
Up until July of last year, we came under the governor's office, and by executive order, he moved us from his office to the Department of Public Safety. For the past 2 years, the governor's office has been including us in his annual report of boards, commissions, and councils. Prior to that time, we've always submitted an individual report, and apparently the legislature was getting so many of the individual reports, they would much prefer to see a combined report of some sort. And that's what has happened for the past 2 years. Now, instead of in the governor's report, it'll be in the public safety report.
Right, Church. Thank you, sir. Representative Booth?
Jim, what is this? Would this program affect in one way or another or none your auxiliary police force, so to speak? In other words, would this be available, this training be available to the, I'm not sure they're on probation and yet they're not police officers in a sense, but would this affect the auxiliary police of each, like in the case of the Anchorage and probably Fairbanks, they've got auxiliary policemen they use in certain times?
Yes. No, sir, this does not affect them.
Would not affect them.
Our statutes only deal with full-time paid police officers.
There is other training programs for them that I imagine.
If there are, I don't believe the state has any for them.
No, not, but I mean within the...
I'm sure, yes, within the municipalities, yes.
And one other question. It is also in the public interest to encourage the establishment of training programs for persons just seeking to become police officers.
Yes, sir.
What's to prevent a bunch of them from people say, oh, hell, I think I'll be a police officer, and now I'm going to go for the training and spend the time in there, and they say, I don't like that thing, I'll get out of there. Shouldn't that be restricted, as it says above, to your probationary and police officers?
The original policy written by the legislature in 1972 said it is in the public interest that education and training be made available to persons seeking to become police officers, etc., police officers in regular service, and so forth. We have, which led some people to the belief that the Police Standards Council should be supplying that pre-hire training, if you will, to an individual who would walk in off the street and say, I want to be a police officer, provide me with training. What we have hoped to do in this change is to eliminate the possibility that someone might think that and yet encourage the establishment of training programs for other than already hired police department. And we already have two such programs in the state. One is the Anchorage Community College, who has a pre-hire basic law enforcement training program, and the community college in Fairbanks is also about halfway toward that goal. So we do have training available for pre-hire individuals.
Thank you.
Mr. Brown, are you preparing the question?
Well, Mr. Chairman, I was just checking when we see language that says repealed and reenacted to read. I have to find out what it is. That's where all the hookers are always hidden. That's where I hide mine.
It's good to know.
Oh, give my secrets to the opposition here. Among other things, preparatory is misspelled on page 2, line 27, in the language to be deleted. That isn't the biggest question in the world. One of my questions is, and it may have been testified to just before I came in, on page 2, line 9, what exactly does it mean to establish minimum employment standards? And that's something you haven't done before.
No, sir, we've had those since 1972, by regulation.
So you've been acting beyond the scope of your statutes since 1972?
No, we have that in, I believe it's section 240. I have the current.
Well, it was just, well, it's not included in the powers there.
Under standards 1865, 240 in our current statutes.
240.
That's our current, I don't know that you would have a.
Well, you have parts of 240 in the bill.
Yeah, there is no change from.
Hold on. Qualifications for the employment of, I don't know if that's the same as employment standards, it's qualifications for employment. Just a moment, Mr. Chairman. I don't read 240 that way, sir. It talks about qualifications for the employment of persons, unless it's been amended, 1865, 240.
40A2.
A2. Possesses other qualifications the council has established, for the employment. Okay. Well, no, the problem is that that's not the same as employment standards. Maybe you've gotten a bill something you don't intend, like minimum age, education, physical and mental standards, citizenship, and so forth. When that is in the bill, then it's unclear what you mean. Sometimes the phrase employment standards without definition might be considered to be what people think of as employment conditions, which are normally a matter negotiated between the employees and the employer, and apparently are not at all what you intend.
Certainly not, no.
Okay. No. Although I can see why it's drafted this way now that I see why I was mistaken. And that is that the current drafting has this included but not limited to in this great big long list, which is not thought to be good legislative drafting. So it might be that my question there would just be addressed by a committee letter, that it was the sense of a committee that we believe standards to be similar to the kind of standards in the current law and not to include employment or conditions of employment. Thank you. Okay, I had misread it for that reason, because that language is not obscure. One other thing. Hold on, I'll find it here. I'll go on to another personal question, Mr. Chairman. I'll find the other thing here. Sure. Whichever, Mr. Chairman, I'm dealing with. I'll try to find what I had while you've got some other questions there, Mr. Chairman.
Are there further questions for the witness?
I did find it. I think I found it anyway. Mr. Chairman.
Yeah, Mr. Brown.
After I compared 280 with the current 280, that's section 9, page 4, lines 6 and 7 and so forth, because, of course, that's repealed and reenacted language, so I had to find out what it was. It looks like what is new here is the fact that chief of police shall meet the requirements of 240A1 after July 1, 1981, and that's not true under current law, is that right?
If they have operational duties in addition to their administrative duties.
We covered that, Mr. Brown.
Oh, okay. I suspected it might have been a question. I don't object to it. I just want to clarify that that was the meaning of the bill.
Mr. Mayor explained to us that we have places where the administrator is also pulling the ship, like Nome, Alaska, and other places like that.
He's a chief in name only,
right?
Actually,
in this office. That they feel that he's got to have police training, which I agree with.
North Pole and Delta Junction. Did anybody follow that up? Is that going to result in some? Would appointed mean reappointed if somebody has a local ordinance where somebody serves a term? I guess nobody serves a term as a police chief, do they?
I know of none.
So then that would only be new people.
Yes.
I guess that's fine.
Does the committee have any further questions, Mr. Mayor? Thank you, sir. Appreciate you testifying. What's the pleasure of the committee on House Bill number 63?
I move we unanimously pass.
And ask for unanimous consent?
Sure.
Hearing no objection, 63 is out and on its way.
Let you have the chairman.
Great.
I don't know about it. Committee chairman moving the governor's bill so early. What you got going for you?
It's all right. I'm just trying to judiciary.
What's the other one?
I don't know, Mike.
53, driving.
Let me ask. Point system bill, is, are you all to testify on that too?
No,
sir. Okay. Yeah. We'll take that one. I hopefully think that'll be fairly short, and then we'll get to the deposit. It shouldn't take too long. It might take a little bit longer than the other.
Okay, the next bill we'll take up then will be House Bill 53, the driving point system. And we have some testimony from the administration on that. And would you, identify yourself directly?
Sure, Mr. Chairman, fellow committee members, I'm Bill Brown from Division of Motor Vehicles Public Safety. Basically, in regards to House Bill 53, it does two things. Number one, it clarifies the time period in which an individual may accumulate the point credits, changing it from 1 year to 12 consecutive months. The main reason for that, some people interpret year under a calendar year or fiscal year, which mean an individual could accumulate no violations for 22 months and still not get a point credit. Somebody else could go 12 months violation-free and get a point credit. This change would make it equal treatment for each driver. Item of changes.
One second.
Sure.
Could you define for me, Bill, what a point credit is?
If a person is violation-free, which means he gets no traffic convictions for 1 year, he gets a credit against on his driving record. So if later he gets a speeding citation, gets 2 points, the credits would remove or knock that down to one.
Oh, really?
Or if he's violation free for 2 years, it would knock off 2 points.
I thought I knew the point system thing. I didn't realize you could get credits.
What happens if you don't have, say that you had 1 point and it's a 2 point violation? You only get racked half as much?
Right.
Okay. Well, that makes sense to me.
And if Allah, Mr. Chairman, how many points does it take to lose your license?
12 in 1 year or 18 in 24 months.
18 in 24
months. Or 12 points in 12 months.
I'm sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt you. I'll let you finish your testimony.
Well, I have a question about the same.
Oh, okay.
How many points can you build up? What's the maximum, theoretically, the way the law is written, you can build up credit for?
At the present time?
Yeah.
It's unlimited, and that's one of the changes that this bill.
What would be the result of this bill?
It would make it down to a maximum of 5 point credits for violation free driving.
I mean, you can't get a lot of money in the bank for 20 years and then go out on a spree and get busted for it and drunk and reckless driving. And
that's one of the purposes for the bill, yes.
Oh, sure.
A run over a representative.
Chairman, the reason I'm kind of interested in this thing because I've had a few points and I hope you can see this thing goes in the right direction as far as I'm concerned.
The second item this changes, of course, is going back then to the fact that it's for a 5 year period rather than at the present time it's indefinite. It's from 1975, January 75, with no limit on it, which is creating two problems. One, number one, means driving records must be maintained from January 1975, and the way the law reads now, indefinitely. And number two is the fact that a person could accumulate 20, 30, 40 credit points, then become a bad driver, and still the point system, which is intent, is to try to catch these people and try to change their driving habits, it would eliminate that type of situation.
Mr. Fuller, go ahead.
So you said, I think I caught you a minute ago, you said you can amass a total of 5 points. That's the maximum?
Right. The way it is presently, it would be violation-free driving within the five-year period preceding the point calculation, which is limited to 5 years.
You don't mean presently, you mean under the bill?
Under the bill, yes.
So that's the maximum you could ever accumulate?
Under this specific section, yes. You can also get point credits under other type situations, such as taking defensive driver's course and so forth, the driver improvement course. You could get other point credits in that type of situation.
Maybe you could still get. Okay, let's keep on. I started, unfortunately, everybody else jumped in too. I think we interrupted your guy in the middle of the testimony, so.
I have is the fact that it changes the year to 12 months, and it changes from indefinite to a five-year period.
Let me ask you this. Before this meeting, I was going to dig out a letter I've got. I may just have to take the judiciary if I can't find it first. I got a letter from a young man who apparently has had a couple of violations. Says that he's over his 12 points. But one of them was in one jurisdiction, I guess in the Department of Public Safety, and the other was some other jurisdiction. I don't know what, maybe it's the city police or something like that. In any case, he was getting penalized by the sentence, in a sense, was to run concurrent. I mean, was to one added on to the other. They were for one and the same offense, and yet he was getting point accumulations from this statute, and he was getting something else from another statute. And the result was that he was, in a sense, getting twice the fine that seemed reasonable. Did I make that clear?
The statutes at the present time specifies that the point system will be over and above any other additional punishment. And how that could happen is, I suppose, an individual could be cited for speeding in the school zone and get 6 points, and then for drunk driving and get 10 points. And on his drunk driving, the court would probably suspend his driver's license. Of course, he has 16 points, and we would also suspend his driver's license for accumulation of points.
Okay, now you just triggered my memory of that. One was suspended for 3 months, and another was one jurisdiction suspended it for 3 months. The other jurisdiction also suspended it for 3 months, and it was, so he's got 6 months to go, and yet it was for the same offense, and so that's.
Yeah, ours, of course, would accumulate more than one offense. The first point suspension is for 30 days. If he gets another point suspension, if he gets 12 additional points within another 12 months, it's for 90 days. And if he gets an additional 12 points, which would be 36, it would be for 1 year.
Okay, I'll have to dig this out. I don't want to blame the bill. I'm on judiciary, so I can dig it up before we get on with it. Mr. Brown?
Well, I'm not going to do anything about it right now, Mr. Chairman, but it seems to me something has come out that seems to be contrary to what you and the other people in the 8th legislature had in mind with the point system, and that is, it's supposed to be an easily comprehensible system, and it seems to involve the point that you've got to have diagrams and Boolean algebra and everything to figure it out. And I'm not sure about this cumulative thing. Just because I've got him here and he's trapped for a moment, and it's just, you know, I know you're just administering the program, whatever, and you deal with it every day, but the thing that I run into is sometimes you have some of the strangest results when you're dealing with a drunk driving case where there are three different things going on, and the average person who's charged with a crime is always so incredibly, he's just surprised about what's going on, because he can go ahead and have license treatment because of the points against his license if he's found guilty of the offense. That's an entire separate thing hanging over here. In addition to that, as part of the sentence in his offense, the judge can, and if it's a second offense, must have license treatment, and that's separate from the first thing. And then the third thing, which is quite entirely different,
is that if he has refused to take the breathalyzer examination under the implied consent law, even if he's later found not guilty, he loses his license for 90 days. And I'm not going to do anything about it right now, but since we're talking about related matters, I just want to flag. It's kind of like triple jeopardy in a way, and it's always bothered me a little bit. And although I know that there's been a court that said otherwise on the drunk driving thing, the decision as to whether or not he really refused, which results in a loss of valuable privilege, is usually not made by a judge in a due process system. It's made by a police officer somewhere at 3 o'clock in the morning. But anyway, I just want to flag the issue. I'm not going to do anything about it right now. It seems like it's gotten a lot more complicated than it did back when, just as I was thinking about possibly running for the legislature for the first time, I was reading the papers about the point system. It sounded to me like the point system and everything that came with it was supposed to make things more uniform and more easily comprehensible to people. I'm not sure it's working.
In defense of the system somewhat. My confusion is the fact that I haven't looked at that letter that we were talking about for several months. I'm just trying to bring it back. So I probably didn't do a very good job of explaining that particular problem at all.
I wasn't just addressing your question.
Yeah,
I run into situations where it seems to come out with very strange results where I thought it was supposed to be rather straightforward, easy to figure out system just based on, you know, basic addition and subtraction.
Mr. Lewis?
Chairman, has this the other system been working before we changed this?
It has, yes. We're getting in somewhat of a bind now, mainly because of the fact, again, of going to have to go back to 1975 and try to determine the point credits if he's violation free 12 months and so forth.
Well, if it's working, I guess my question is, why are we trying to fix it if it's working? And I think along your lines, I don't know how you explain all this to the public and be able to have them have a comprehensive idea. I think it's too complicated the way it is. And it's costing a great deal more work in the department, I would assume. As you just said, go back to 1975 and start working.
The current law, is, he says, that the new one is only having to go back 5 years.
Yeah, and again, with the current law, if it is not changed in 1985, of course, we're going to have records for 10 years and 11 years.
In your opinion, is this, whose benefit is this for? The law enforcement, the administration, or the offendee?
Personally, I think it would be to the benefit of the general motoring public in order to try to remove the dangerous driver from the road, possibly if he accumulates a large number of points. And number two is administrative.
Thank you. No further questions.
Is there further questions from any other member? Is there anybody else that wants to testify on this bill? I kind of presume you're not. What's the pleasure of the committee on this legislation? Mr. Brown?
I move the bill, although, you know, I know some of my friends would sure like to be able to build up an infinite number of points against their next drunk driving charge or reckless driving or negligent driving charge. Hope they aren't too unhappy with me when they find that I've made that motion.
Okay, is there an objection? Hearing none, the bill will move.
I
note
that you're very familiar with those 3 a.m.
As an attorney.
Okay, now we'll return to the subject of youth hostels. Thank you very much, Bill. Let's see. It's my own bill, I don't know the number. Which one is it? 28, is it? House Bill 28 and 29 for that matter.
God, this is going to be the second unanimous committee report.
It hasn't gone through.
Mr. Cuddy, I haven't had a chance here yet.
He hadn't had an opportunity.
Oh, we had a unanimous one yesterday. Yeah, yesterday.
That's 3 in a row.
Martin, confused. You're really burning up the bill, Chairman. You're whipping him out.
Today he signed in the do pass column and put do not pass.
Not I.
No, I said Terry did. I don't know.
Terry did.
Yesterday he just made a mistake.
Do pass and sign.
But I was looking it over and I said,
what the hey?
Okay, let's take up House Bill 28 and 29.
I don't understand. Are we in inverse chronological order in the book? I guess that's what it is.
Okay. Maybe so. I'm not sure.
I just go by the colors.
Oh, you're in the colors.
I'll buy you some crayons.
29 appropriates $300,000 to the fund established in 28. So we'll take up 28. Who would like to testify? Bruce, do you want to testify on this legislation?
Mr. Chairman, I am prepared to answer questions.
Yeah, listen, come up. Bruce, tell, identify yourself. You would, yes. Your affiliation with the hospital.
Mr. Chairman.
Mr. Brown?
Since it's your bill and all, maybe you can just walk us through what were we coming back on? I remember there were some questions we had, and I got some incomprehensible marginal notes. And maybe you can remind us what we're checking on here and getting further information.
Okay. There were a couple of reasons that we particularly want to talk to Mr. Tello, because I couldn't recap his conversation entirely, although I think I pretty well covered it. There's a section in here that removes hostels from the language of the other restaurants, I mean, not restaurants, but other...
Oh, yeah, right.
Accommodations had to be under. In addition, gotcha. We had some reservations on the part of the Department of Economic Development. They were kind of interested in establishing a term limit to the proposition, and I think that the folks in the hospital have been working with Sharon Trader, the lady that was there. I think they've come up with some suggested language. You have copies of that?
The language on the first page of the section is from Sharon Trader.
Okay, yeah, that's right, yeah. On the right behind the little green tab, I'll tell you what the language has been suggested. Yeah, Mr. Brown?
Mr. Chairman, and with regard to that, just parenthetically at least, my memory of the people from Department of Commerce and Economic Development was that they were saying this dollar figure per bed night was the problem that would be the administrative nightmare for them, and that they were looking at some other method of determining payments, because then they'd have to have some system of auditing and that sort of thing, and that's why they hit us with a huge, at least based on this scale, a huge fiscal note. Maybe later on the people can address that, but now that you've reminded me in response to my question, I guess the problem I had is I looked up, where'd the bill go? Where'd it go here? What are those provisions about? Health standards, what's the section I'm looking for? It's kind of a reverse double whammy hidden system. That is section 2. You wouldn't even know it from just knowing that somewhere in some title or other you're amending definition of tourist accommodations. And yet if you look to see what section that is, it relates to health standards. And then at least apparently it means, and of course I gave the most extreme example, and no doubt it's not the intention of anybody who drafted it, but it might be that the result is that for some reason somebody doesn't want to open toilet activity in the outdoors near a youth hostel chartered by American Youth Hostel seems to be a crime, because that's in something else that you're being exempted from. And I was suggesting that maybe there's some particular part of that entire chapter, because by doing this we're exempting these from all of Chapter 35 of Title 18. And maybe the proponents instead want to exempt hostels from particular sections of Title 35, but not the whole thing. That's just exempting it from all health standards. Right? Maybe Mr. Patello could address.
Yeah, right. And you, if you would,
let me identify myself. Yeah. Yes, I'm Bruce Patello. I serve as the president of the Alaska Council for American Youth Hostels, which is the body within the state of Alaska responsible for the management and supervision of youth hostels chartered by American Youth Hostels, Inc. The reason this particular provision in the bill, with giving you some background, in prior to statehood, the Department of Health and Welfare had promulgated regulations dealing with tourist accommodations. Those regulations have not changed since statehood. If one were to review the 7AAC Chapter 20, one would discover that the regulations, although charged by the legislature to adopt regulations dealing with all manner of tourist accommodations, only deals with camps, and in most respects are completely inappropriate to the operation of a youth hostel. in early September under the Alaska Administrative Procedure Act, we petitioned the Department of Health and Social Services to adopt regulations dealing specifically with youth hostels, because we believe that the National Council of American Youth Hostels has established very extensive criteria for health and safety regulations, much more extensive than we believe was either contemplated by the statute or by the regulations themselves. Didn't receive a response at all. As it turned out, the responsibility for that chapter was by executive order transferred to the Department of Environmental Conservation, and we've yet to receive a response, although we understand they have continued to are examining that among other regulations transferred to them. The problem that we see, number one, is that we believe the standards for youth hostels are already set forth, that if a hostel is chartered by American Youth Hostels Inc., it already on its face meets all requirements set forth in the statute. As I've already indicated, the regulations are completely inapplicable because they only deal with camps, something that we do not operate. That, I think, is the essence of our concern. We think it's unnecessary bureaucratic hassle for us to register when the department itself is not, in fact, providing the kind of guidelines contemplated by the Act.
Mr. Brown?
I guess I have a couple of problems. Yeah, I guess you were talking about territorial years. Yes, most of all, you're talking about early sections of Chapter 35 were passed, Session Laws 1955.
That's correct.
And you're talking about deleting this group from these definitions. But tourists, but the various sections, okay, now 030 does give them the power to promulgate regulations.
That's right.
Now, I don't know why, perhaps. You could not have an exemption from that particular section or the application of it, because, for instance, again, I'll read it, 060, this would be exempted. No person may dispose of human excreta, garbage or refuse on or near a public way or thoroughfare on or near a tourist accommodation except in the use of appropriate facilities. Since there's no penalty provided in the chapter, apparently a general provision making that a minor misdemeanor would apply, and you're saying that that's all right with regard to a youth hostel. Now, you can't possibly mean that,
no.
And yet that's the effect of the section that's in the bill. It would seem to me that if your concern is the regulations, and you should have a more surgical method involved here, not address tourist accommodations. For one thing, in my view, Mr. Chairman, it's bad legislative drafting to say that tourist accommodations are not things that obviously in the plain meaning of the word mean tourist accommodations. When you're drafting a bill, if you mean to do something, do it specifically. It's almost as ridiculous as the U.S. Congress declaring the East River non-navigable, which they did a few years ago. And you see all those big tugs going by there. Is your concern Section 030, which is the regulations and the power of the department to promulgate these regulations, and you want to be exempt from?
Well, that's part of the problem, Representative Brown. We're concerned about the requirement of obtaining a permit, the possibility that without the permit one is subject to a misdemeanor. We may well be talking...
Well, you could be exempted from the provisions of Section 30 and 40, which is regulations and permits, but still the specific statutory matters involving posting your regulations and unlawful disposal of waste and the other things would still apply to you.
Yes, we have no problem with that. We simply, in our view, that number one, our standards would preclude that type of disposal in any case, and also the fact that all of our hostels are located within municipalities, which in every case, at this point anyway, that's not to indicate that we're not looking at other areas, regulate the disposal of waste.
Well, Mr. Chairman, the other problem I have, and it's not a big deal, but Mr. Patelho certainly is familiar with the argument, I think, considering his professional background, and that is that we have a reference to a specific private entity
in by name, in a proper name, in a statute. And doesn't that bother you a little bit? Do you find it public purpose?
Not from this standpoint. The legislature has already enacted a bill calling for the establishment of a state system of youth hostels to be administered by the Department of Natural Resources. And that statute also makes specific reference to American Youth Hostels, Inc. as being the organization whose standards would be adopted. And we're basically furthering the public purpose in the sense that we are attempting to assist the Department of Natural Resources in carrying out their specific responsibility of establishing a hostel system in the state.
Well,
I understand your concern, and I don't mean to minimize it. I think we've been able to rationalize it in a way, I guess, that's at least one.
Well, of course, I had the same objection, although I voted for the bill. I did voice the same objection when we passed the original law. And let me just try this on you. Do you think that if you say the term does not mean a youth hostel chartered by American Youth Hostels, Inc., we pass that. Then a year later, American Youth Hostels, Inc. changes the standards under which they charter someone. Would a court then later say that we have unconstitutionally delegated our legislative authority to a group who was then acting based on that authority at a moment in the future?
I think the problem would be if one were adopting the standards of American Youth Hostels. The interpretation, I think, consistently applied has been that a requirement that we designate the specific edition of the regulations which have been adopted by reference.
So I'm not speaking of that sort of bill, sir.
Okay.
I'm talking about the section of the bill on page 2,
okay.
Lines 21 and 22. That is,
however,
this term does not mean a youth hostel chartered by
American Youth Hostels,
Inc. We put that in a statute. And then a year from now, American Youth Hostels, in this hypothetical, then changes the standards under which they charter.
It poses a problem.
Then, therefore, isn't there a fair color of argument that that's an unconstitutional delegation of our legislative authority?
I think there's an argument.
I think there's more than an argument.
Not too prolong the argument, but as a member of the Borough Assembly, you know, time and time again, we adopted as our building standards the Association of, you know, electrical standards and plumbing standards and all that good stuff.
The proper constitutional way of doing that, Mr. Chairman, after particularly sitting, having the thing constantly come up for two years on labor and management, 2 years on commerce, according to the advice we have from the Attorney General's office and our own lawyers, is to adopt a particular one that is already in existence, so that then you are not delegating to someone to change the law in the future without the legislature involving it. That's why we have to pass laws every so often that upgrade our reference to the National Bureau of Fire Underwriters and so forth, the 1971 edition, the 1975 edition, and so forth. The problem is that we pointed out here that there is a circumstance under which the way this is written, that if the American Youth Hostels, Inc. changed the standards under which they charter youth hostels after the passage of this act, then we are delegating our authority relating to actions of private parties in the future. And those actions by private parties in the future, without any further action by us, can change the law of Alaska. And therefore, it's an unconstitutional delegation of our legislative authority.
What's the remedy if it is a problem?
I'm not, apparently I was misunderstanding you. I think we're in entire agreement on that issue. Are you referring, Representative Brown, to Section 3 rather than Section 2?
Oh, I'm referring to Section 2.
Okay.
The hypothetical I'm saying applies quite literally to it. I think the thing might be amended. That is, if we say chartered under the current standards of, or this chartered under the charter standards of American Youth Hostels, Inc., existing on the effective date of this act.
We would have no objection to that at all. I think
now, what would we have to do in Section 3?
I think your concern would be then the specific guidelines established, although
the guidelines in existence on the effective date of this act or something like that.
Yeah, and we would have no objection to either of those changes.
Would somebody write that down while we're saying the impression? So. Marcia, did you get those? That language? Oh, okay, that's good, okay.
That is, youth hostels chartered according to the chartering standards of American youth hostels on the effective date of this act, and that would be for section two. And then section three, it would be guidelines existing on the effective date of this act as established by, so it'd be an insert after the words guidelines on page two, line 27.
While the language is fresh in my mind, I'd just like to ask the committee, is there objection to that amendment? Hearing none, you'll consider that section amended then.
Mr. Chairman, it still bothers me that I'm, you know, it's only because Mr. Patel is a very reputable fellow that I'm going to take his word for the fact that there's some standard out there that I've never seen that apparently provides for all these sanitary standards as well or better than Chapter 35, Title 18.
Mr. Chairman, I have Xeroxed off, although not the complete document, something that might serve as an exhibit to this hearing today, which I think will allay some of the concerns of Representative Brown. If I
indicates just, what some of the standards are and that sort of thing?
Yes, it does. It refers to the four different facilities that are operated by American Youth Hostels, Shelter Hostel, Simple Hostel, Standard, and Superior. Deals with such issues as dormitory spaces, fire standards. Should be understood that these are all supplementary to any requirements that may be imposed by a local government. Hands to Representative Brown.
Sounds like trial or
trying to rate the hand.
Yeah, that's very good habit to get into, Mr. Patel.
Yeah, Mr. Abood?
Mr. Chairman, was I under the impression or that the last time we met on this, we were supposed to have some other fiscal notes on this?
Jeff, what is the fiscal note situation? My impression was that fiscal note is no longer all that much of a problem since she's found out we're only talking about maybe two or three a year. She was apparently anticipating a whole bunch. I hope I'm not misleading you, but my impression is that they're almost just going to handle this out of their existing staff now that they know we really are only talking about $300,000 for a total amount, which only means one or two
blank here.
Mr. Chairman, I object.
Last time that, given the new language which she has written for us and a more certain accounting system, that she could downscale the current fiscal note in full.
What I wanted to see was the downscale fiscal note.
She hasn't finished that.
It's probably not finished.
Well, other than I object to $94,700 to administer a $300,000 loan, and secondly,
I think the rest of the judge.
I'm going to pass this.
If I may ask a few questions.
Go ahead.
Would you relate to me again, please, what your position is in the youth hostel
hierarchy? Yes. I serve as the president of the Alaska Council, American Youth Hostels.
The Alaska Council. Are you in the Attorney General's office, by chance?
Yes, I am.
You're an Assistant District Attorney or
Assistant Attorney General.
Attorney General.
Yes, that's
right. He's not here in that capacity.
You're here in the
private. I understand.
That's right, and I have submitted a leave slip to that effect.
No.
Submitted who?
A leave slip so that I am on my own time.
Another thing, if I might add, back in 1977, or 78, I believe, you received $15,000 from the Department of Parks, from our State Department of Parks. Am I correct there?
Not exactly. The Division of State Parks received an appropriation. The council has not received any funds outside of this the current fiscal year.
How about $25,000 for 80?
That was, again, appropriation to the Department of Natural Resources, not.
And none of the hostels have received this money.
There has been one grant for $1,500 made by the Division of State Parks to the Anchorage Hostel.
And then another in 82 there'd be a $40,000 allocated for the youth hostels.
Again, to the Department of Natural Resources. That's correct.
And it's been earmarked for the hostels. Is that correct?
That's right.
We haven't used it, is that correct? Up to, except the $1,500.
At this stage, my understanding is that monies have, first of all, the monies have been going to the division and not to the council. The council has received assistance in these regards. We have conducted teleconferences as our means of, our major means. The division has also provided a great deal of staff support from those funds, and also has allowed us to hold in the last fiscal year and this fiscal year meetings, one in Sitka, one in Anchorage.
Well, sir, I've been through and inspected the Anchorage one, and I see they need things there. Now, if we're going to spend the money that's given from the Division of the Parks to the council for administrative purposes and trips, etc., and none or very little to the hostels that need the money, I look at that a little askance. Yeah. Secondly,
maybe I can respond to that because I'm responsible for those those budget items. That money was not supposed to go for hard goods. We were starting out from ground zero. Didn't even have a hospital coordinator's office until we created one. So we needed a few bucks to cover his or her salary first. One person and then now a second person is doing an excellent job on the days that that person was assigned, wherein now her hostel coordinators had. Need a little bit of travel money. None of that money was supposed to go for hard goods. Now, there's a crying need for some money for some hard goods, and that's where this $300,000 in a loan would go.
Mr. Chairman,
hard goods. I'm sorry, go ahead.
Representative Wood, I think there is a misunderstanding. There has been no money made available to the council in the form of a grant or any other money. All that money is held in the account of the Division of State Parks. They have, for the first time, the Anchorage Committee made a request at its last meeting to State Parks for an appropriation of $1,500, which required also the approval of the State Council under the guidelines set up by the State Division of Parks. We immediately approved that request, and the money was made available. We have not ourselves, we do not have an account that reflects any money coming from State Parks, either this year or last year when the council was established. We now have an employee who receives $150 a month, basically to cover her expenses, and I believe you met with her on Sunday evening. It was Pat McGee, who serves as our executive director, in essence, a staff person, but we ourselves have not received the money.
If I may continue.
Yeah, sure, go ahead.
I object to an interest-free loan, number one. I object also to $300,000 being put out as a loan because, in essence, and I don't know how many more would not be affected by this loan, Anchorage or... And I've got a lot of heartburn on this for the reason that I'm going to have to vote against this thing, but I am for the hostels. And it will not do my hostel in my district with my constituents one iota of good. They can't even qualify to get one nickel out of this fund. Conversely, you know, because it's the only one I have at hand to talk about at the moment, and that's not to say there aren't more, elsewhere are being asked to leave a church down here, and they're going to be without one, and therefore they need something to get into right away. And this money, if it's passed, would give them the opportunity, but it denies the Anchorage Hostel for having anything because of the rate structure. Now, we heard somebody sit here the other day and state they didn't want to charge anything, but if they will charge $2 in order to come up to the loan deal. Now, in the case of Anchorage, where they charge $5, and that's the max that they can charge, they're paying $350. They've made quite a good deal out of this thing, and I don't see why it can't be done elsewhere without this construction fund. They're doing a very excellent job there, but they're paying $350 to the
owner
of the place, and a buck and a half, if they do that, the buck and a half goes for toilet paper, for various and sundry things in the deal. And it just seems to me that this is a fund that's set up to to help, and I'm sorry, it's the only example I have of it.
Right, I understand.
To help out Juno get a place to build something. Well, you can't build anything for $100,000 of any consequence. You must have running water. You've got to have kitchen facilities according to the statutes on the thing, number one. And it just, the people themselves up there don't want it. The people that really work for it. There's better ways. They'd rather have, if nothing, a grant. They'd rather have $5,000 a year than they would a loan of $200,000 because they can't qualify to get it. Now, if in fact you were to get this loan and have to pay in and pay in the $2 per night, where you, and that's all you're going to charge, which, who was it sat here? Some gentleman sat here, I believe it was, and said that they didn't want to charge anything, but they would charge the $2, I guess. What are you going to use for operating capital except?
Well, that's not right. This is $2 over and above anything else that's currently being charged. I think you misunderstood. If you thought anybody was only going to charge the $2, that's over and above what is going to be charged.
Perhaps I can respond because I think I can shed some light, partly because I was one of the persons involved in issuing the Anchorage lease on behalf of the Anchorage committee. The committee, just to clarify for the other members of the committee, has entered into an agreement with a property owner in Anchorage who runs a facility because at the time they had no idea how they were going to be able to make the monthly payments. Agreed to a fee schedule which would require them to take the first $3.50 of each fee received to be applied to the rent. And then there's a scaling which, if they exceed an occupancy rate of some 500 or 700 people a month, the scale goes down. In any case, the remainder of the money is what is available for operating. Now, this lease is on a year-by-year basis. Right now, just in their eighth month of operation. And it is true that given the current language of the bill, they would not be able to take the $2 off the top, and because they've already made a prior commitment. I'm not convinced, however, that the committee intends to see that facility as the long term. Certainly in the short term, that would be the case. I also did have an opportunity to explain some of the concerns and meet with that committee on Monday evening. I cannot represent to the committee. They still do not have concerns because under the current language that would not be the case. Obviously, we as a council would also favor an out-and-out grant, but I think we realize that every citizens group in the state is interested in having free money, and that given our limited resources, the best we could do to show our good faith in trying to treat this as something other than just a freebie is our willingness to take a substantial amount of resources that we receive to pay back the loan and to pay back to the legislature, in essence, their faith that Alaska does need a hostel system and in our ability to provide one. All the hostels in the state are required to charge a fee, and that fee is based in part on the quality, in large part on the quality of the facility.
They're anticipating picking up a couple of more apartments upstairs now.
Yes, that's right.
Under the same basis.
Yes.
So it looks to me as though they are going to go ahead with their future planning of that building. As a matter of fact, are they not contemplating, if things turn out good, that perhaps buying that thing for the youth hostels from the owners and making some kind of a deal? It is a futuristic thought.
My understanding is no, partly because the place is in our view, a fire hazard. The only reason it's still in operation, we're allowed to have a hostel there, is that it was basically grandfathered in under the Anchorage Municipal Code. We have some very serious concerns about it, and in order to, without getting into a lot of detail on it, it's a problem. I think it's very clear that they intend to be operating under there at least for another year. I suspect longer, until a more suitable facility becomes available, but I would at the same time represent that I think they're looking for a facility that they can call their own.
Except a supervised school group. In other words, any school group can come in from any place, and we don't charge them anything to do bed to offset the loan. I just don't, it just doesn't appear to me that it's a good business proposition from a businessman's standpoint.
Well, I think that's part of the problem, is assuming we probably aren't good business people, but we are concerned. We're a volunteer organization, very much concerned with providing accommodations which allow people to travel cheaply, in particular to encourage within Alaska school groups, for instance, taking Juneau as a good example, and being able to encourage school groups to be able to visit their capital during the winter months without imposing an undue hardship on them financially. Now, in some respects, it's been taken care of in the past by having kids stay in homes, but we really don't have the facilities in Juneau short of hotels to take care of those students, and I think that's what we were aiming at. We think it's actually a service that is a benefit which outweighs the cost to the state, that is encouraging children to see their state.
Well, it's not easy to sit here and be against something that's in my own district and my constituents are involved, as it would be to be against motherhood and all those other nice little things. But this is not, I don't feel that this is a proper thing for my personal opinion that we'd be getting into. I don't think the structure.
Yeah, I understand your concern. I understand your concern.
And if we were to go on, and especially a no-interest loan, I don't think we've got one. And why should, if we do that, are we not opening up the door for perhaps more very worthy educational things, if you will? Nobody wants to touch education because it's a no-no if you're against anything of that. And you're giving money to it. I am one that particularly different viewpoint of. I have no further questions, but in view of the fact that we don't have the up-to-date, the new additional fiscal note on it, I'd ask that we put this over until we receive exactly to find out how much this administration would cost by money.
Well, one thing I really wanted to do is move this bill along. We've still got to go to finance, and it's going to have a tough row up there. As members have had to leave, they've signed off. Conflict of opinion, so I'd like to move the bill today. I'll supply with that information as promptly as we receive it. But is that, Mr. Cuddy?
Excuse me, did you make a motion?
Sir?
Did you make a motion?
I move that we hold it over. I mean, but the votes is going to.
Yeah, actually, as I said, if you want to force a hold it till tomorrow, we can do it, except. It's going to move tomorrow, and I'm trying to, clear the decks on some of these things. So,
how can we, Mr. Chairman? How can we move it? We still have a piece of information to come in on it, such as the fiscal note.
Well, it's going up to fiscal. It's going up to the finance committee, where that's going to be the main thing they're going to be interested in. In a sense, I frequently take a worst case situation mentally, and say, under a worst case situation, would I still be for it? In this case, I'd say, yeah. But it's knowing role.
I'll withdraw my motion, and
I'll make sure that information gets to you just as promptly as we receive it. And in addition, of course, we will get financed. I'll make sure you're notified when the bill's up there in case it makes a difference in your consideration of it. Okay, I would appreciate a motion so we can have it on the record, incorporating the language. In fact, incorporating the language that was recommended by the Department of Economic Development, which you have right here. The loans will be repaid in equal monthly or CNO payments, et cetera, et cetera. This meets their criteria for being able to monitor. They feel like they can do that in pretty good shape. Is there objection to that motion?
I think I object to the motion. You or object to that language in there. Sorry, I'll be so.
Yeah, it's the loans will be repaid in monthly, in equal monthly or seasonal installments based on $2 per bed night as projected in the applicant's performance income statement, except the supervised school groups will not be counted in bed nights for the purpose of clearing the payment.
Would bill is that? I'm sorry.
$28.
So they could repay it in equal monthly installments. Or if they couldn't do that by the month, then they would pay it in seasonal installments.
Yeah. What it really amounts to is they're going to have to cut a deal with economic development that economic development can live with, that meets their accounting and financial.
Could not this, may I ask just one other question? Could not this, could it now? Suppose you got 25 supervised school groups, totaling 20 apiece or whatever, and they all hit these things, this place down here in Juneau or Anchorage at the same time. And there's no room at the end, if you will. Does not this, then that'll happen. Does not that keep that loan from being paid even longer because there's no bed nights to be paid into the repayment fund?
That's a potential problem, yes. If I understand it, it would.
I would object to the portions of this, but I'll sign what you guys say.
Okay, I appreciate it.
Mr. Chairman, there is one small typographical error on page 1, line 22. Reference to AS412540 should actually read AS412450.
Okay, the engrossing, we've got engrossing language we can take care of that. We don't have to have anything on that. Okay, this has been one of the stranger parliamentary procedures, and people have been signing off and then having to leave. But with the accumulation of names we've got right here now, everybody's signed off on it, so I will declare the bill properly moved through the committee. Is there anything else to come before the committee?
The language previously mentioned about construction, purchase, or remodeling of new houses, has that been approved?
That was approved, yeah. That was, I think, at least by consensus the other night. There was no objection to that language, so we'll move that. Okay, if there's nothing further to come before the committee, we'll stand adjourned. Thank you very much.
Thank you.